Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Right now I have on the phone a member of a group called the Master Plan, named Donald Bruce. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so
Donnie
Bruce, okay. I didn't know how you wanted to be referred to, so I went more formal, but I'll call you Donnie for the interview. So sorry about that. So first of all, usually on my show I interview Chicago groups, but regular listeners of my show know that I am a big fan of groups from the Bay Area, and I play records. I play records by your group on my show a lot because you guys have fantastic harmony, and I love your records. So I am honored to have you on my show telling your story. So we'll be going through and talking about the history of your groups and playing a few of your records that we have time for in this half hour. So first of all, your group originally wasn't called the Master Plan, is that right?
That's correct. First of all, let me just say it's a pleasure for me to be on your show. And first of all, we started out as the Emotions, and we changed our name to the Windjammers, and our final name was the Master Plan.
Okay, well, so one thing I wanted to ask about is there was a group from the Bay Area called the Emotions that had a hit around, like a local hit around 65, called The Love of a Girl. So you weren't related to that group, right?
No, we weren't.
Okay. So, and what part of the Bay Area are you from?
Well, I'm from San Francisco, a place called Hunters Point.
Okay. And is all the group from there?
The majority of us, yes.
Okay. So could you describe, like, what the scene was like over there? Because I'm always interviewing Chicago groups, and I have a good idea of what Chicago was like. But I interviewed, I guess, Chris James of the Natural Four, but I have no idea what it was like in the Bay Area, like what the scene was like over there. So could you talk a little bit about sort of what the scene was like back then?
Well, back then, it was some guys that got together and started in junior high school. We all grew up in the projects, and you know, we wanted to sing. Back then, we really couldn't sing, but we were really happy to get out there and try out, you know. But as a thing goes, you know, practice makes perfect. So we started out in junior high, and we went to high school, and we got back together in high school. And the scene was pretty cool, you know. We got to be very popular back in San Francisco in the high school circuit, or you say the community circuit. And from there, we started to record our music, and we started out with Only You and Hey Girl and Clinton Park and
So when I ask what the scene was like, one thing I'm trying to get at is like a lot of Bay Area groups had like a different kind of harmony than groups from other areas. Like that's why I really like playing groups from the Bay Area on the show. They had like a really kind of tight like falsetto harmony that was like different than like the Philly falsetto harmony. Like I don't know how to describe it exactly. Like it had a unique kind of sound. So could you talk about, like, what the influences are? Like, would you, were, like, the Whispers a big influence? Like, what were the types of groups that were influencing you?
Okay, the influences were the Temptations, the Spinners, and you had the OJs. It influenced us a lot back then. And even the Jackson 5, you know, had the harmonies. And we kind of patterned ourselves off after some of those groups. Now the Whispers, they were our competition.
But they started off much earlier than you, right?
Well, yeah, they started off much earlier. They moved from L.A. to San Francisco area, and they did a lot of entertaining up here. So we kind of, put ourselves against them and tried to outdo them in some of the performances.
Okay, so you said you originally formed as the Emotions. So what year did the Emotions form?
Well, I'd say actually formed the Emotions in probably 1966 as we were juniors in high school. And there was Ronald Bell, John Trotman, Otis Stroman, Robert Brown, and myself.
Okay, and then you became the Windjammers, is that right?
Yes, the Windjammers. We had a contract dispute, and the owner of the record company said, well, he was going to take our name, and so we just said, well, you can keep the name. We're going to go off and we just change our name.
So you were signed with a company as the Emotions?
No, we signed as the Windjammers, because when the Emotions came out, the girl group that was supported by Earth, Wind, and Fire, then we said, hey, guys, you know, they got the name, they got it out here first, we got to change it. So we changed it to Windjammers at that point. Okay. And that's when we signed into a record label, and they decided that they were going to keep the name because we weren't satisfied with the record company.
So the Windjammers originally signed to the Bula Bula label, is that right?
Yes.
And that who ran that label?
That was Willie Hoskins.
And how'd you end up signing with him?
Well, you know, he came out to hear us at one of our gigs, and he liked what he heard, and he asked around, you know, what people in the group who had hired us for gigs and what they thought of us, and the next thing you know, we were on the label.
Okay, and so he released a record on you, and it was called Poor Sad Child, Part 1 and 2.
Yes, that was written by John Trotman.
And I was listening.
It was about his family.
Oh, okay. And I was listening to it today, and it had almost like a Temptations kind of sound to it.
That's right. They were very, a very big influence on us.
But you still had, like I was saying, it was Temptations, but still had kind of that Bay Area kind of harmony, too, on top of that.
Yeah, well, we had some guys in our group that could really sky in falsettos, and we had one guy in there actually could sing a lot like Marvin Gaye. He had a natural that would go right into his falsetto and back out without any breaks. That was Otis Stroman. He was phenomenal.
So who sings lead on Poor Sad Child?
John Trotman. He wrote it, so he wrote the song, so he says he's going to sing the song.
Okay. Well, I don't know if we have time within the interview. I'll play it at the end if we have time. But the record was actually picked up by a major label, Kent Records, and they released it with a B-side called All That Shines Is Not Gold.
Right.
Which I think was written by Wally Cox. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. But I don't think that was us that sang that song.
So you think that that's a different group?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, yeah, they were doing weird stuff like that back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day, they were doing it just to see what would hit.
Okay, so Poor Sad Child was your group song, and then you think that some other group did the flip.
Yes.
So they released that song, and then that song came out around what year? I have it listed in a book in 71. Does that sound right?
Poor Sad Child? Wow, I think it actually came out before 71, but that's... That could be right. I mean, you know, my memory might not serve me right now, but it could be right.
So you were saying earlier that due to contractual disputes, they were like, we're going to keep the name. So you changed your name and you moved on. Is that right?
That's right.
So you changed your name to The Master Plan. Who came up with that name?
Oh, wow. I really don't remember, but I think we kind of like threw some names out in the hat, and the guys, we were a very democratic group. We had a democratic vote, you know. We would vote what you think about this and what would you think about that, and guys would say, hey, I like this and I like that, and if we all agreed, we stuck with the name.
Okay, and so the Master Plan and the Windjammers, were you performing around the Bay Area?
Yeah, we sure did. We formed at all kind of venues, community centers, libraries, local clubs. You know, we had people who actually would throw parties and hire us to sing for their parties.
Okay, so there weren't any like major venues that all the groups performed at that time?
Oh, well, there's a place that they call the Bimbos. That was a big club on the up in the Broadway in North Beach, and that's where most of the clubs would actually, you know, the groups would perform at.
Okay, so what are some of the other Bay Area groups that you played with that were big at the time?
The Promatics, as I remember, the Soul Injections. There's a few girls that were out there, but groups I can't remember too many groups that were out there because we were kind of special, and so we didn't keep track of too many groups at that time.
The Soul Injections, were they the same group that did that song "Young Girl Full of Charm"?
With Soul Injections, where they were kind of like a band in a group. So I'm not sure if they actually recorded.
Because there was a group from California called the Soul Injections that recorded, actually.
Oh, okay.
So maybe it's that same group that I mentioned.
It could be.
Okay, that's interesting. So, but I never knew they were from the Bay Area, if that's the group.
Yeah.
But they cut an excellent record, if that's the group. So yeah, did you ever perform with, like, the Whispers or the Natural Four or the Tower of Power, any of the bigger groups?
Oh, we performed with Smokey Robinson at the Cow Palace in San Francisco. We performed with Eugene Record at the Berkeley Community Center.
With the Shy Lights, you mean, or just Eugene?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, with the Shy Lights at the Berkeley Community Center in Berkeley, California. It's around the college there. And most of the stuff we did, you know, on our own, but... those are the big names that I guess were at the time that we performed with.
Okay. So you actually ended up finally signing another record deal with a label called Foss Glow Records.
Yes, Foss Glow, yeah. We went into a partnership with the owner of the record, so we were kind of part owners of Foss Glow.
So did you help come up with the label name too, or was it...
Well, no, Foss Glow was Warren Foster, okay, and his wife Gloria. I think they came up with the name.
Okay.
Foss Glow Records.
Yeah, because I can see the partnership thing because it says on the records, it says a Foster Master Plan production on all the records.
Yeah.
So there was a gap in between the Windjammers record, which supposedly came out, you said, 71 or even earlier, and your first record, which was Hey Girl, You Won My Heart on Foss Glow, which came out around 74. So there was about a three-year period at least where you weren't recording. Were you trying to get a record deal during that time, or were you just doing shows?
Well, most of the time we were doing entertainment. Warren Foster was our manager at the time, and he was in charge of any business that we were were associated with. So, I mean, at the time, he was trying to get deals where he could. So, but, you know, record companies that day, in those days, weren't really offering much in the way of a deal. So we were just waiting for the right deal to come along.
Okay. So you ended up cutting this first record, Hey Girl, You Won My Heart, which is an excellent record, and this is the example of what I've been talking about as sort of Bay Area harmony, which I can't put into words, but people can hear it. So I want to play the record, and we could talk some more. Is that okay?
Okay.
So this is The Master Plan with their first record they released as The Master Plan. This is Hey Girl, You Won My Heart. Okay, that was just The Master Plan with the very first record they released as The Master Plan. That was Hey Girl, You Won My Heart, and that came out in 1974 on the Fosglow record label out of the Bay Area. And if you're just tuning in, I have Donnie Bruce, member of The Master Plan. So who sings lead on that record?
Well, on that record, I believe everybody takes a turn on that record. Robert sings, Robert Brown was the writer of the record, and Ronald Bell, he sings the high part. And the last person that that you heard on the record is Otis Stroman. He's a guy that has a phenomenal voice. I even had a little part on it, but I was a bass singer.
Okay. And on that record is an example of what I can't – I'm not, like, musically articulate enough to put into words, but it has the type of harmony that I keep saying is, like, Bay Area harmony. Like,
yeah.
It's got really tight kind of falsetto harmony, but it's different than, like, Philly harmony with the falsetto. Like, I don't know how to describe the harmony, but that's kind of what I think of when I think of Bay Area harmony is what you guys – are doing on that record. So
well, we prided ourselves in our harmonies. You know, we used to rehearse and rehearse and rehearse, and the one person that would keep us straight on our harmonies was Otis. Otis had perfect ear pitch. You know, you could ping on a light bulb or on a tin or anything like that. He could tell you what key it is. If he hears a chord, he can pick out the notes in a chord. So he really helped us a lot when it came to our harmonies and actually keeping us straight and on top of things.
So did that record get play in the Bay Area?
Oh, yes. It did. It got pretty much play.
But it didn't really get distributed outside the Bay Area, right?
No, it did not. That record, you know, like I said, you know, in those days you had to shop around for a record deal to go big. But we wanted to control our own destiny with our own music. So we formed Fosglow as a way of taking control of what we did and how we did it. Instead of having some group, you know, some company, big company, take you and actually change your style or change your music.
And your follow-up record had a similar, like, really – follow-up record was great, too. It was called Only You Can Touch This Heart of Mine, which had a very similar sound with great harmony. It was an awesome record also. And then the third record that was released on Fosglow was called The Girl in Clinton Park.
Yes.
And that record ended up getting picked up by a major label, which was D-Light Records in New York, which most famously was releasing Kool & the Gang.
Right.
So what's the story? How did you end up getting picked up by Delight Records in New York?
Well, that song was written by Little Stanley, and the lead vocals were done by Otis Stroman. And it was the background of it. It's the song was about somebody's in love with somebody in the Clinton Park, and it's about a little girl. And it got picked up. I think Warren Foster went to New York and actually played it for Delight Records because they was interested. And that's how we got signed, when they heard Clinton Park.
So you actually went and shopped it around?
Yes. All of our music shopped around, like I said, because we was on False Glow and it was a partnership. So in that partnership, that was so we can take control of our music so someone can't basically change our style or have us sing some other way, sing like somebody else. So we had our own style of music.
Okay, well, let me play the record just because this was your biggest record, and then we could talk some more.
Okay.
So this is The Master Plan with the girl from Clinton Park.
Yeah, righto. In Oakland, California, there's a big housing complex known as Clinton Park. And in this particular housing complex, there's a sweet little girl who I love and adore so much. And if you would give me a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you.
In Clinton Park there lives a sweet little girl, yeah. And believe me when I tell you that she's my whole world, yeah. She brightens of my days when I'm weary and dark, yeah. And my heart and my soul belongs to the girl who lives in Clinton Park. Mm-hmm. In Clinton Park there lives a dream. I've been working for the flame of love burning brightly in my heart, yeah. Cause you see, my heart and my soul belong to the girl who lives in Clinton Park.
In Clinton Park.
Ooh, sometimes I get mad at her, but it only lasts a little while.
Okay, that was just The Master Plan with the third record they released under the name The Master Plan, and that got picked up nationally by Delight Records, and Donnie was just talking about how that was written by Little Stanley, who is Stanley Lippitt, is that correct?
That's correct.
And the twist in the song is that his little baby is his actual baby, right?
Right.
And
in love with the little girl in Clinton Park.
And Clinton Park, where was that? Was that was like some project?
That was a housing project in Oakland, California.
So none of you guys had anything to – none of you guys lived there, is that right?
No, we lived in San Francisco.
Okay. So did that record get any play nationally or locally?
It got some play nationally. That's how we got on Light Records. So the Light is a large company. Like you said, distributed Kool & the Gang's records. So we got some play.
And Delight ended up reissuing, they reissued Hey Girl, which was, they reissued it nationally. But one thing I've also forgot to ask you is your lineup changed a little bit also, right? Like one of the members had left after Hey Girl, You Won My Heart.
Yeah, the person who wrote the record, Robert Brown, he had some personal issues, so he moved on and the group moved on. And there's only four left. And we recorded Benny and the Jets and some other things at that time. But it was a great experience.
So the group went down from the original five of the Windjammers to four members.
That's right, a master plan.
But at D-Light Records, pretty much the only new song that they released that hadn't been released at Fosglow was a version of Benny and the Jets. Is that right?
That's correct. That is Elton John's hit record, and we tagged on that.
What's the story? Why did you decide to release Benny and the Jets?
Well, the story was that a couple of members of the group and our producer was Ron Foster. He thought that if we did a good job on Elton John's Tag, that it would, actually could be a hit. But it didn't turn out that way.
It was
a good record, but Elton John had just, released it not too long ago, and it was on the charts, and people didn't actually get to the record very well.
So D-Light Records dropped you after that?
Yeah, they dropped us after that, and we were independent again.
So did you leave the group after that?
Actually, I stayed with the group for, I think, maybe another year or two. We landed a deal with a company out of L.A., and they sent us to Canada in 1976 for the summer to write music. So we left our homes and went to Canada and got jobs up there, and we lived there for the whole summer and just wrote music. And when we came back and we tried to record, we wanted to record the music, but that's when things broke down in the group.
Okay. So you left the group after that?
Yeah, after that I left the group.
And the group cut one more record on Amani Records, Will I Have to Dance All Night?
Yes.
But that was without you, and that came out in 78.
That is correct.
And then I have one more record that the group cut in the 80s on Fosglow called Living, Loving, Laughing.
Uh-huh.
So, and pretty much none of the members did anything after that that you know about?
That is correct. I know one of the members kept singing with a group, but I never known him to actually record after that.
Okay.
After the master plan.
Okay, well, unfortunately, we have run out of time, but I just want to thank you so much, first of all, for cutting so much great records. Like, I play your records on my show, and you guys have such great harmonies, and you guys cut, even though you didn't cut that much material, you cut great material. So I want to thank you so much for cutting the material that you did, and thank you so much for doing the interview and telling your story.
My appreciation for you having me, and happy to be on your program.
Okay, well, thanks again, and have a great night.
All right, then.
Okay, well, I'll be calling you later in the week, and have a good night.
Okay.
Okay.
You too. Bye.
Okay, bye.